In this episode, I'm joined by the United States Pony Club Equine Welfare Task Force. This is made up of Dr. Stacy Anderson, Heather Bell, Dr. Laura Thompson, and Christina Keim. In creating this, they are really leading the way for education on equine wellness and will have a huge influence on a new generation of horsemen. This is so important, and I'm excited to have these wonderful women on the pod. I think you'll love hearing about what they've created and will leave feeling pretty optimistic. So here we go, episode 251, the United States Pony Club Equine Welfare Task Force. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. I'm really excited to be joined by these four women who are having such a big impact on one of the most important subjects related to horses, which is their welfare. Now, the United States Pony Club is a global organization. Originally, it was just for kids, and now it's for people of all ages. I was a pony clubber. Shout out to Old Suffolk Pony Club on Long Island. Not sure if it even exists still, but I have such fond memories of my days in pony club. Now, I first heard about this task force when I presented at the United States Pony Club National Convention last year, and I immediately approached them and invited them to come on the pod. They said it was still in process of being created and was too soon at that time, so I was really happy when they reached out to me and let me know that now they were ready. So I want to start with just a little about each person. So Christina Keim, you already met on episode 236. Christina is an award-winning equestrian journalist and professional horsewoman with over 25 years experience in the industry. She's also the author of the new book, Unwanted, The Causes and Effects of America's Horse Population Crisis. And Christina now teaches compassionate horsemanship and offers equestrian yoga and mounted mindfulness. Dr. Stacy Anderson is an equine surgeon who serves as the dean of the Richard A. Gillespie College of Veterinary Medicine at Lincoln Memorial University, located in Harrogate, Tennessee. She's an active leader and national examiner with the United States Pony Club and currently competes at the FEI dressage levels. Heather Bell is a life member of the United States Pony Club, graduate A, career as a wildlife biologist specializing in endangered species recovery and leading agencies through contentious decisions and change. And Dr. Laura Thompson has been an ambulatory equine vet in northern Colorado for almost 25 years. She teaches part-time at the Front Range Community College for the last 20-plus years. She has her USPC HA rating and still rides and competes, and her daughter competes at FEI level in vaulting, and they train their own horse from scratch to FEI. I forgot to add that I was an HA graduate of Pony Club too. At the time I was at that level, I was now competing a lot in dressage and I wasn't jumping my horse anymore, so we stopped at HA. But I'm so proud of my time in Pony Club. Before we get into it, I thought I'd share here also the United States Pony Club's official policy statement, and it goes like this. The United States Pony Clubs Incorporated is dedicated to upholding the highest standards of equine care and management. All members, leaders, volunteers, and affiliates are expected to ensure that riding, training, handling, and management practices prioritize the horse's physical, mental, and emotional well-being. The United States Pony Club integrates current research and best practices into its educational programs to prepare members to be responsible and ethical stewards of the horse throughout their equestrian pursuits. Okay, let's meet these wonderful women. Well, I am excited. We have a full house today, and I'm really happy to have these amazing four women here to talk about a subject that is so important. The reason why I want to have this conversation is because I've said so many times before, the horse industry needs to deal with the horse welfare issue in a better way, in a proactive way. I think if it doesn't, and if we don't, then we risk losing our social license and the whole thing can be shut down. And that's a shame because there is a way to do things well and better. So I know those of you listening to this Horse Training in Harmony podcast are people who, love horses, who do see horses as sentient beings and also want to share in activities with their horses, right? So everything from hanging out in non-demanding time to trail rides to competition. We all care really deeply about our horses' experiences while we do this, and we want them to be happy and healthy. So we've got four people here. So I think I'll start by helping to connect a voice to a name. So if I could do a quick round of each of you saying your name and sharing maybe a few words about why you personally got involved in taking on the welfare issue. And I think if you guys don't mind, I'll just go around the room and start with Dr. Laura Thompson.
Hi, I'm Dr. Laura Thompson. I'm a veterinarian in Northern Colorado, and I have competed horses all my life, including everything from backyard to FEI level. And to me, this was important because I've been to shows where it honestly can be cringeworthy, some of the things that you see happening in the warm-up rings, as well as the competition rings. I'm a FEI veterinarian as well, and that has not fixed it or helped it at all. So I think we need to start at the ground level and get everybody motivated to make a difference.
Awesome. Thanks, Laura. Heather Bell.
This is Heather Bell, and I would actually go back to the start of my experience with horses when I just loved to go jump on my pony and spend time with them and groom them, and the competition wasn't there. And actually, as I went through my life with horses and went through Pony Club, I learned in a very traditional way, right? The sort of cavalry where it came from. And the more I studied the horse and had a friend who sort of introduced me to clicker training, the more I realized I need to return to that person who was just in love with my pony. And why was that? Well, it's because they're such incredible beings and they have so much to offer us. So can we turn around and offer that back to them? And how do we do that? And how do we do it in a structure of an organization who not only teaches, but has competitions, et cetera? And really has some very standardized ways of bringing people through the levels. How can we keep that as we move up? It's almost like it sort of gets lost by the time you get to the top. And as a national examiner, we were starting to see that, and wanted to kind of bring people back and make that connection with the horse, partly through them understanding how different they are and how much the same they are as we are. So. Yeah.
Very cool. Thanks, Heather. And Dr. Stacey Anderson.
Hi, I'm Stacey Anderson. I'm an equine veterinarian as well and a graduate Pony Club member. Been involved with the organization quite a bit at leadership levels and especially developing curriculum and testing. And I'm currently the dean at the Lincoln Memorial University's College of Veterinary Medicine in Tennessee. So I am regularly involved in educating future veterinarians on welfare. But the reason that I was really interested in working on this project is because I think the United States Pony Club does a fantastic job of developing the next generation of horse people that really are already focused on the care of the horse, maybe more so than other youth organizations. But there was still some areas that we need to work on, quite frankly. So I think we're really strong in some of the areas, but need to bring forward some of the things that Heather was talking about, like the behavior and the training and things a little more. So when this came up, I was really interested in being involved.
Awesome. Thank you. And Christina Keim, already been on the podcast once before. You're an old friend here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to be back. Thank you. I'm Christina Keim. I live in New Hampshire. I am also a Pony Club alumna, and I am an equestrian journalist. So I write frequently on subjects related to welfare and well-being. It's become a particular area of focus for me, and somewhat similar to what a lot of these other ladies have stated, as I've gone on in my own personal equestrian journey, I really value the relationship and partnership with my horses. I enjoy competing, but that's not my main motivation in being around horses anymore. Not that it really ever was, but I would say it's fallen even further into the background. I like to compete, but I really want to ensure that the animals in my care are having the best opportunity to live their good lives. And we see so many examples of this not maybe going the way it could, and we know better, we can do better. So it just is a really important conversation for us to keep having as an industry if we want to continue, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited that this is happening through Pony Club. I mean, for a few reasons. I'm a pony clubber. HA, Old Suffolk Pony Club, which I don't even know if they exist anymore, but I sure had a good time at it. Such an important part of my education. And so much of the conversation around welfare seems to be of like there's a violation, and then we talk about the punishment. And what you guys are doing is involved in the proactive part. Like, let's educate. And I know Pony Club's not just for kids, but it's like it is. You're really shaping a next generation. So maybe could one of you, for those of you who are not familiar with Pony Club, could one of you just share briefly like what Pony Club is?
I can tackle that.
Okay.
This is Christina. Pony Club started 75 years ago, just over 75 years ago in the US, inspired by a model that came from the UK to educate juniors about how to properly care for and ride and train their horses. And in the UK, any mount ridden by a junior is called a pony, even if they are some sort of 17 three-hand draft creature. So the name Pony Club comes from that. You aren't necessarily all riding Thelwell ponies, although there are certainly lessons that feel that way. Over the years, Pony Club had a pretty strong kind of eventing focus because its members were taught how to ride in the open as well as over fences in the arena and on the flat. But as our industry has changed and evolved, so has the US Pony Club. So today, membership is open to enthusiasts of all ages, and we have specialty tracks in just dressage or just hunter seat equitation. We even now have a little bit of Western and Western dressage included. Our members can compete in different kinds of, we call them rallies. So there's games rally and polo cross and tetrathlon, as well as more traditional sports like show jumping and eventing and dressage. So there's really something for everyone. But at its core, it is an educational organization, and our goal really is to make possible a lifetime of partnership with horses, and keeping those horses at the forefront of the activities.
Yeah, that's one of the things I loved about Pony Club is it really educated me about how to take care of my horse. And if it wasn't for Pony Club, I might not have been doing dressage at all, because I had to do dressage in order to do the fun part. And it was at a Pony Club. Our Pony Club was invited to a junior hunt where my little horse took off with me, and the huntsman had to like gallop after me and grab onto my horse, and he led me up to my mom and said, "Take this kid for dressage lessons so she could learn how to control her horse." And the rest is history. So I owe a lot to Pony Club.
We love
Anyway,
it.
So what prompted the creation of the Equine Welfare Task Force? Were there certain gaps or concerns that were coming up that that you wanted it to address within Pony Club, or just, within any part of the equestrian world?
Heather, I think that's you.
Certainly, we've seen the images on social media. We've seen the new rulings coming down from both national and international organizations. And what struck me was that nobody was really talking about education, right? It was all about sort of punishment of the rider or trainer for their behavior. And we all know that we copy those heroes of ours. And particularly young kids do, right? If their trainer says to do X, they do X, and very little question about why they're doing X. So I thought it was important that our members know what it is we do well already. And for the outside to know what we do well, because we're as much under that social license magnification as anybody else, because the public doesn't differentiate us from whatever video they saw on social media. So, and I, as I mentioned before, I started to see gaps, as I'm sure the other ladies on this have, of understanding horse behavior. And I started researching horse senses and how brains work. And I'm a scientist, so I got, totally down the geek rabbit hole. And I thought, our members don't know this. I'll talk to them about it and realize they don't know how a horse sees. They don't know how they hear. They don't know why they see or hear the way they do. So I thought that that was important. And then that just kind of kept going, that really what we needed to do was look not just on how we care for them in the barn and wrap legs and that kind of thing, but when we walk into the barn, asking ourselves, how does my horse feel today? What's he experiencing in the life I've created for him? Because we're the ones that do that. Does he have his friends? Does he get to move in and out of the shade? Things that we now know are really important for them, but our members didn't necessarily have that on their educational track. That was it. And we needed to educate our leaders. They seem to be sort of very unaware of the social license issues that we would just be lumped with everybody else. They thought, well, everybody should know we're very good. And that's a mistake, right? That's an assumption that we needed to change in them. And once we talked to them, they were very understanding and very enthusiastic about what we were doing. So yeah, they took it up pretty quickly.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Anybody else have anything you want to add to any specific gaps or concerns that maybe you're thinking that it really solves by having a task force?
I'll just add that at the start, we were kind of appointed. We sort of approached them, and then we were appointed by Pony Club's executive director, Teresa Woods, and the president of the board, Jennifer Sweet. So we were kind of working under their direction. And adding on to what Heather was just saying, we held a number of different calls and chats with stakeholders, both within and outside the organization, to get a better sense of what people's level of understanding was around social license, specifically, and then kind of the difference between welfare and welfare. I'm using air quotes here, where we were talking about more subtle components to welfare. And that, I think, Stacy can probably speak to this more eloquently, or Laura, from their veterinary perspective. But this idea of what horses truly need and want versus what we think they might want in their management and their care, and those were maybe some of the areas that we could provide more content. We could provide more clear and direct education in those areas.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, I don't know if we'll get into this later, but that's exactly, I think, where Pony Club is great at teaching the horse care, and in a way that is definitely welfare forward. But some of the why of it was not always explained to the members. And then, you know, taking it a little bit farther, that they're thinking of their horse or pony as their own being, right? Not just my horse or pony that I'm doing what I want to with. Like, they have their own autonomy and their own right to, you know, be a horse or a pony. So.
Yeah, I love that, what Heather said of like, how does my horse feel today? That's such a simple question. And just to plant that seed, you know, that's the sort of thing that gets in someone's mind of like, oh, how does my horse feel today? How could I answer that question? I mean, I love that. So how do you guys define equine welfare?
So I can tackle that. So we did a lot of, you know, looking at, I mean, there's a lot of work in welfare, right? Across in animals. We cover it fairly extensively in veterinary curriculums and in animal science curriculums, some things like that. And so we looked at the basis of animal welfare, and then kind of tweaked it to be user friendly for, you know, a younger member and people that are maybe not looking at it from the lens of a healthcare provider slash animal management, but more as a horse owner. So we kind of distilled it down into five domains. That roughly align to the five freedoms that have been previously described. And I don't know how much detail you want to get into that, but
I'd love, yeah, you can go into detail. Hey, I just wanted to take a quick second to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by the Dressage Naturally Video Classroom. Yeah, that's my program. So if you love this podcast, you will really love the video classroom. It's where you can see me coaching students, narrating my rides on horses, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and so much more. So let's see all these words put into action. Check it out with a 1 week free trial, and then it's just $29 a month after that. So even if you only watch one video a month, it is totally worth it. So what are you waiting for? Go to dressagenaturally.net/classroom. Okay, now let's get back to the pod.
I think it should be mentioned too that Christina did a fantastic article for Chronicle of the Horse this week, and that can be looked at as well for general public. That's easy for people to access.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I did a quick Google, just USPC Equine Task Force, and lots of stuff came up, some blogs from Pony Club and this Chronicle article. So yeah, I do tempt people to go ahead and you guys are already, even as a new task force, are very Googleable. So this is great news.
And, it is actually great news.
yeah, no, stuff came right up.
So what we did, we took the five freedoms that were developed in the 60s out of the United Kingdom. So and then kind of transposed them. So the first one in really no particular order, I guess, but freedom from hunger and thirst in the United States Pony Club kind of curriculum language. We equated that to nutrition, which is already a pretty big part of the Pony Club curriculum. And then freedom from pain, injury, and disease, we kind of put into the health domain, which again, I think is very well covered in the United States Pony Club curriculum. And I can say that as someone who teaches vet students and knowing that Pony Club members know sometimes as much as vet students about certain things. And then freedom from fear and distress. We put that into the environment domain. So, you know, what the horse's environment is. Again, Pony Club does, you know, look at that more from like a safety perspective, maybe more so than like from a behavior perspective, but definitely is touched upon. And then freedom to behave normally, we put into a behavior domain. And I think this is one of the areas that we would like to see much more developed in the United States Pony Club curriculum. So that's something that hopefully this task force or those that come after this task force will be able to develop curriculum around that. And then the final one is freedom from discomfort. And that kind of along with the freedom from fear and distress kind of goes into like the overall just kind of well-being of the horse or the emotional state, mental state of the horse. And that's kind of our fifth domain. So that, you know, again, they mimic the kind of five freedoms of generic animal welfare, but we've tweaked them to kind of meet and match the Pony Club curriculum a little better.
Really cool. Yeah, and so you need to adapt that then, because like you said, you have like D, you know, b basic level pony clubbers on through the level. So, yeah, how are you handling that?
So that I think will be, I mean, that'll be work that probably the curriculum, there's different curriculum committees in Pony Club that are going to want to be involved and already actually are working on some of that. We've sketched out some ideas, mostly because some of us have been involved with the, actually, Chris, Heather, and myself have both or have all been on the Pony Club curriculum committees that the name changes here and there over the last, what, probably 5, 10 years. You know, but it you can start very simple with, I mean, Heather's question of how is my horse feeling today is like a perfect question for even a D Pony Clubber to think about. And just recognizing what normal behavior is, and then kind of progressing from there. But we've definitely thought about it, but that will be further defined
Yeah.
in committee.
I remember I spoke with a Antonia Henderson, who's a equine psychologist, and she was telling me about a study where they were trying to track and keep track of like different stereotypies that horses were displaying, whether they were weaving or cribbing or, you know, pawing or, you know, these different things. And so they went to different barns and they educated the people working there, and they understood, and all they had to do was just, okay, if this horse paws, write it down. If this horse, you know, weaves, write it down. And they all understood. And she found that even though they understood it and they did it, where it was going wrong was they didn't notice. Like it was so out into the normal range that it literally would be like someone sitting there going, "Don't you see that horse weaving? Aren't you going to mark that down?" And they're like, "Oh, yeah, clearly." You know, so to bring that into the awareness, and just an interesting way that human brains function and just learn how to forget about things that they see all the time. So I think one of the exciting possibilities is like to, when you guys figure out how to do this, to do it at a level that someone really basic can understand, then on to, you know, more and more nuance, but simple things of like, is your horse pawing? Is your horse weaving? You know, because it's not just for kids. I think, you know, professionals in the horse industry are going to need something that simple, because unfortunately, like I think what Laura was saying, you know, we're used to it. We see this all the time at the highest levels. So I'm so excited to see what you guys end up coming up with. I know this is all pretty new.
Well, and I think this kind of speaks to, you know, our task forces, you know, we sort of have our immediate goals, kind of the nuts and bolts, and then these broader aspirational goals. But we really, you know, our big aspirational goal is to really make the ethos of this organization be equine well-being is the priority, or horse well-being is the priority. And not that it isn't already, but to articulate it in that way so that it's such a conscious and clear component to everything we do. And we've certainly talked about the fact that to make that happen, you know, we need to teach the teachers, right? And as Heather spoke to, a lot of us growing up, we're taught kind of the old military way. I mean, when it was life or death, yeah, your horse just had to kind of answer you. And so methods could be a bit more assertive, shall we say, in creating an outcome with that horse. But it was a different, it was a different relationship, and the horse was serving a much different function. You know, today we have the luxury of really being able to understand how these animals best function, and you know, to help our younger or newer equestrians acquire these skills is going to require re-educating people who've been doing this a long time and helping them to understand as well. And, you know, to kind of speak to the idea of how do you introduce this at a basic level, you know, if you have a child or a new rider taking a lesson and the horse refuses the fence, instead of immediately going to some kind of a correction, that instructor hopefully can have a bit of a explanation of, well, why would a horse do that? Why would they act in this way? And kind of go through that checklist with their student beyond just, oh, the horse is being stubborn, because that's so frequently the problem. There's often so much more behind it, and to help the student learn to think that way and to see the horse through that lens, that behavior is how the horse is trying to communicate its own, his own needs or his own perspective, right?
Absolutely. It's, and even having that protocol of, if that happens, what do? You pause and you ask some questions. Like, that alone, just to give that little tiny space to go, huh, let's see what's happening here. And it's exciting because of all the different organizations. Like, I think Pony Club is just perfect for this, because, like, I always feel like you never know about something until you have to teach it. Because in trying to teach it makes you really look at it differently. And because this is all practical based, you're trying to teach it to people who are out there doing something with their horse. And like, how, I mean, it's such a, you're such leaders, and it's just really, really exciting. So I think this is really cool. Yeah, what are some of the common welfare issues that you see, you know, sort of on an everyday level, whether it's in management or, like Laura said, at competitions, you know, that are, I'm sure there's some, many things that are sort of well-intended, or they're just ingrained in a tradition, but it's misunderstood.
Unknown caller.
Oh. Yeah, I think a lot of what I see as a, you know, veterinary professional is housing situations for the horses are not ideal. Out here, we have a lot of dry lot areas, and they get fed twice a day. And then they wonder why they have colic issues or behavior issues. And, you know, or the horse is just being bad because it has ulcers because it's only getting fed twice a day. And there's a lot of old school type thinking in this part of the country where, well, that's just what you do. And now trying to re-educate them is, it's a challenge. And honestly, the younger generations seem to be a lot more conducive to listening to that, or even at least hearing it, right? Where the old grumpy cowboy is just going to ignore you because you don't know any better, right? Because you're one of those newfangled kids out of the college, right? But, here, that's the biggest issue that I see, is housing and feeding issues.
In the board meeting, when we presented this summer to the board after we did some work, there was a lot of discussion about the Pony Club sound, in air quotes, you know, like sound enough to do a D level rally, but as we know, those aren't always perfectly sound. So, you know, I think as we're going through this time where we're really looking at equine welfare, well-being, and our social license to operate, we have to ask ourselves, is serviceably sound okay? You know, is that acceptable? And that's a hard question sometimes to ask ourselves, especially when we're relying on those older horses to teach our younger members. They're safe, they're really good at their job, but, you know, Is it fair to them all the time? So that's going to be I think a question that the organization's definitely going to have to grapple with. And yeah, that was a huge discussion among the board members when this was presented.
The other
Yeah,
one.
yeah. I have to agree with Stacy on that. I mean, I'm kind of a hardliner on that sort of thing with some of my clients trying to push these lesson horses. And I had one yesterday. I said, absolutely not. We need to be done. This horse needs to be retired. And I made some enemies doing it, but it's what's right for the horse. And the horse was saying no in a lot of ways that they didn't really see until I pointed them out. And then they were slightly horrified that that's the horse had gotten to that point without them noticing it. So they're learning. People are definitely wanting to learn, which is great.
The other one we
Yeah.
hear is my pony's being bad, or it's just a naughty pony. That's one we hear a lot. And then it's opening the door for punishment by the rider instead of curiosity. So if we could change that, where, as you said, Karen, something happens, pony stops at a jump. Is it a naughty pony? Or is it telling people his feet hurt, right? That he's getting navicular and that this is no longer a comfortable thing. Or whatever. There are so many reasons a pony might stop at a jump. Let's take the pause and say, why could that be? Is the pony naughty, or is it just behavior? And we need to take a little investigative mindset to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, in taking on this monumental task that you guys are, I think there's going to be a lot of places where you provide answers, but I think there's a huge benefit for you guys just coming up with the questions. What are the questions to ask? If your lesson horse is, what are the questions to ask if your pony is quote unquote misbehaving? Yeah. So
And I think
interesting.
that this subject can get so, there's so much gray zone here, right? Where, when we, if we're truly honest, what horses really would like is to live in a herd and eat little and often and graze and not have much to do with us at all. But that's not going to be reality. So how do we balance, our needs, desires, wants, whatever it is we want to do with the animals, with their horsey needs, right? With allowing them to still express some normal horsey behaviors. And so that puts us into some of these gray zone conversations. So we think the good news is that, particularly among pony clubbers, for the most part, because of the organization's emphasis on education, on horse management, on good quality horse care, we don't see a lot of horrific things, which is wonderful. That is amazing. So we're trying to take this really great foundation and up level it, and to help members, to help their instructors, to help the leaders of the different levels of pony club organization, add even that one more layer. Like, okay, because of how we keep horses here, I'm in the Northeast Corridor. There is a lot of snow and ice out my window right now, and the reality is that it may not be safe for some of these horses to be turned out because it's simply too icy. So, given that my horse may be stuck in a stall or stuck in a smaller area and not able to get turned out, what can I do to enhance this animal's well-being during this period that our climate is just wretched, frankly. What can I do? And to recognize that that's important, that may be more important than doing a schooling ride to find some way to engage that horse mentally, physically, and allow him to have some horsey time, right? That may need to be a different way of thinking in terms of care. That's a variable we haven't necessarily always put into the conversation.
Yeah, the enrichment and the mental, the mental emotional well-being and the value that the horse places on the relationship. And I always like to have this thing of like, if my horse wrote a book today saying My Life with Karen, what kind of book would it be, right? And so the reality is there's some chapters where the horse would be like, that was hard. Or that didn't feel so good. But like I want to feel like overall I'm turning the dials in such a way that the horse is healthy, he's happy when I'm not around. And then I make up for it in the ways that I can if I'm feeling like I'm not serving him as well as I could in some other area. But these are all such great questions, and I love that again you guys are not at the how are we going to punish someone for this thing that they did? You guys are taking something that's already pretty darn good and you're looking at how to make it even better. And that makes me really happy that somebody's doing that. How can other riders or parents or instructors or officials, share this responsibility? What are things other people can do?
I was thinking about that. I think we have this sort of awesome spot right now where we could really think about educating parents. So often with our younger members, the parent is taking them to Pony Club and dropping them off and then picking them up, taking them to rallies where you probably remember, Karen, the parents aren't allowed in the
That
park.
was the best part
They had to stay out
for
there
me.
so the members could show exactly what they knew, wonderful things they knew. But this is critical, I think, for anybody who is around these horses, whether it's parents, officials, people in the warm-up arena, our horse management judges who are awesome, right? In the barn, you remember that. And the horse management judges are pretty excited about this, because that's what they've been wanting to do all along. But we have this history of doing points and things like that, rather than how could we make the horses really enjoy as best we can this opportunity of them being stuck in stalls and doing this competition. So they're pretty excited about that. But our ability to reach out to parents, I think, right now is perfect. And having people watching competition and making sure things are going okay and feeling as if they can say something, right? Like, this pony is really nervous. Maybe we can figure out a way to work with the trainer to bring the nervousness down, right? Is there a way we can do that in the warm-up arena or whatever, so that they feel that they can approach somebody and say, hey, this is not going well. My pony is screaming in the stalls because his buddy left.
Yeah.
Just bring the other horse out, bring it with, have it go with the other horse. But again, it's a little more of being open-minded to changing the way we've done things before.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah, because the reality is sometimes the people further away from the horse world see it more than the people in the horse world. At dressage competitions, there's a bunch of educated dressage people analyzing the shoulder in, and somebody's cousin walks up and goes, "That horse looks miserable." And they're right.
And
So,
that's social license at its core, right? It sometimes
exactly.
takes that outside perspective to kind of shake you up a little bit to see what's right in front of you that you've normalized, right? That's become kind of the tradition. And it's interesting, as Pony Club has allowed equestrians of all ages to join. I don't know about the rest of you ladies, but I feel like I work with a fair amount of amateur adults, right? Some of them are re-riders, they rode as kids and they're coming back into it. Some of them are people who never had a chance to be part of Pony Club as youth, and they're able to do it now, and they're kind of fulfilling this desire they had from the past. And I think they're really hungry for this information. I think that audience in particular, when I work with them, are among the first to be asking questions of me and of others about whether, a particular piece of tack is appropriate, or the adjustment is right, or should I be doing XYZ in terms of therapy to support my horse's soundness and health? They're asking these questions, and it's been really heartening to hear it and to see it. And so, absolutely, we can educate parents. We're going to educate these adult amateurs. We're going to talk to the youth, and it's just this really broad grassroots effort to change the way of thinking. And
Yeah, and as far as the parents, even if the parents aren't necessarily horse people, instead of just dropping their kid off for their riding lesson, could it be a tennis lesson? But to understand that what you guys are teaching, how people treat animals is reflected in how they relates to how they relate to other people, and to be teaching things like compassion and empathy and relationship and, communication, and this is all big, important life stuff. And if the parents understand that there's these things being taught, beyond just running around with the horse, I don't know. I feel that's like those ripples that can lead to bigger and better things. And these, it's going to change how I would dream that it's how you help people treat their horses is going to affect how they treat other people. That's my dream. Fingers crossed. It
Well, and
can
we've
work,
recognized too, we've talked about this. As much as we would love every single Pony Club member to stay involved with our organization and go through the levels and be active, and the reality is that for many reasons, people will come in and out of Pony Club, for a period of time. And so, if we can make that impact, right from the beginning, if we can make that impact and help them to start to think a little differently about how they do things and to learn to ask questions. And if they encounter someone using methods or taking an approach that is counter to some of that, to question it, or if they don't feel comfortable to question it, to find an adult to speak to who maybe could take that questioning role, our work will have been useful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that really interested me was the idea of learning theory. How do horses learn something? They're such intelligent beings, but they don't necessarily learn the same way we do, but they're very good at cause and effect, which we aren't, because we sometimes have to have the same lesson multiple times before we remember it. And I think that's an aspect that many of our Pony Club members will really enjoy. To understand, wow, my horse learned that really quickly. But 3 months ago, I tried to teach him something and it didn't work. And, something as simple as lining up to the mounting block, right? And you can teach the horse and say, hey, we're going for a ride. And they line themselves up to the mounting block. I mean, if I were a kid, I'd be going, whoa, really? I just taught my horse that. Well, what difference is that between eventually doing a jumping course or a cross country course or something where you're really working with that horse as you're learning together too, right? The horse needs to be able to tell you, I don't like that method, or I don't really like that job. We all know that. We've been in the horse business long enough to recognize when a horse really doesn't like their job, but we've also been doing it a long time, right? So if we can get our members to see, oh, my horse really likes to do this, and I can tell by his body position, by his behavior, by how he looks at me when I arrive, even though I don't have an apple today. I think those things are going to be of real interest to our members.
Oh, absolutely. I think learning how to ask your horse for things that are independent of physical demand gives an opportunity to see just how generous our horses are. So if they're in the barn doing, what I call my cute little tricks, but they're, stand over there and don't move, or put your nose on this thing and touch it, and you see how quickly they can learn and how generous they are, it'll change your perspective of when they like, well, now why are they refusing the jump? Oh, maybe their feet are sore. Maybe, because they're obviously wanting to be generous and they're smart learners. And again, that can invite a different level of questioning. So, what does good horse welfare look like in practice? So maybe not just in the barn, but in training decisions, competition goals, long-term partnerships. Like what does that look like? I know that's sort of a big paint a picture kind of question, but
I can start with that, and I'm sure others will want to expand. I think the thing that it means is that the horse is always first, which is something that Pony Club has always emphasized. I remember distinctly as a young Pony Club member coming off of cross country, and the first thing you're doing is taking care of your horse. Who cares if you're dying of heat exhaustion yourself, right? And so I think, everything that we do, we think about it from the perspective of our horse. Like, how are they perceiving it? How are they reacting to it? How are we reacting to their reaction? And that kind of also lends to the beauty of working with horses is that they very much teach you how to be emotionally intelligent, how to regulate yourself, right? And so I think that would be the first thing is just putting yourself in your horse's shoes, in your horse's body, and understanding their perspective.
Awesome. Anybody else want to touch on that?
I think Stacy's way of sort of expressing that the horse is the priority, the horse comes first. We say that, people say that all the time, but then they'll perform in a way or do something that doesn't put the horse first because they just don't understand enough about how horses are fundamentally different as a prey species. You know, they're fundamentally different from us as a predator species, the human species. So just taking the time, to promote that idea of well-being, I think requires taking the time and commitment to educate yourself and to be open-minded to some new or different approaches. And Laura mentioned my editorial that ran in the Chronicle this week, and I sort of say, as a community, we can be a bit resistant to change, I'm not saying anything no one's heard before, and we tend to do things because that's the way we were taught. The fact that we still lead and handle from the left because soldiers carried their swords on the left hip is a little bit the pinnacle of that, right? There is no good rational reason for us to still do everything, and yet that's what we teach from the get-go. So, I think there's a need to honor being open-minded and to take some education and to be open to that feedback if someone brings you a different way of doing things to understand where that might affect the horse in a positive way that you've never considered. I don't know if I just went a little off topic there, but whatever.
Oh no, that was awesome.
And I definitely agree with Chris that, and sometimes we have to lead by example, right? So I compete, my daughter competes in vaulting. So that's, a bit different than what most of our audience is, but, trying to lead by example. So when we are at competitions, making sure that putting the horse first means that no, you do not get to have dinner, but the horse gets its massage, gets the acupuncture, gets whatever it needs. Does it need 12 walks a day? If it does, great. Guess what? The horse gets 12 walks a day out of the stable. And kind of leading by example at competitions and, doing different tack. Nobody needs a severe bit that we see in some of our jumpers. Nobody needs those. Like, I ride my FEI horse at home in a bitless bridle because I can, right? And in the warm-up, I'll do that at the competitions as well. Yes, she has to wear a bit for a competition, but in the warm-up, she's bitless. So makes a
Yeah.
difference.
It does. Yeah. The risk being different.
Yeah.
Something I always notice. I don't go to many shows these days, but I have a few students who are competing, so every now and then I'll show up at one. And the thing that I notice the most is well, I notice lots of things, but the language, how these horses are talked to and talked about is really, really interesting compared to, the community that I'm usually in. And you can really see how much the ego is there and how much they are commodities that are, they were expensive, so they have to compete. And yeah, it's jarring. And so I think again, the what you guys are putting together and building this up and giving people the questions to ask and the way of looking at things and the languaging around it to help make better decisions is just really, really, really cool. And yeah, anybody else have anything they want to share? And then we'll start wrapping it up.
Just, we are so lucky so blessed to be able to have these animals in our lives. We have chosen a sport that uses another being in order to do that sport. And it's our responsibility to care for them. And we don't get to put them in a closet. You know, if we want to go on vacation, we can't just say, oh, throw the tennis racket in the closet. We are their stewards, their guardians. That's our job. And I think sometimes that gets forgotten because we love riding. We love going to do this. And sometimes there's that disconnect between I love horses and actually what we're doing. And I think that's a matter of education. It's encouraging curiosity. It's encouraging our members to teach others. They love doing that, right? Pony Club is great at that. If they finish a ride at a standards and rating, you know, at a standards, they're to come in and tell us how well it went, not us tell them how it went. And so they really love talking about their performances. So can we get them really curious and interested in the latest information, the latest research? I just learned the other day that ergots have nerve cells. I have no idea, right?
Lots of nerve cells, as does the chestnut.
Yeah, and that was news to me, and I was excited about it. I must have told everybody I saw that day about that. So I hope we'll encourage that curiosity and speaking out and teaching, just like we always have with every other topic in Pony Club that we teach.
Awesome. I really hope that what you are putting together doesn't just stay inside Pony Club, although it will still be hugely valuable, but I really hope that what you discover and you put together can be shared, and that you don't hesitate to bring it to the larger horse community. And you guys are all welcome back on here anytime any of you feel like you have something to say and want to share, just let me know. You're welcome back here. And if there's any way that I can ever help you with what you're doing, don't hesitate, because it's so, so, so important. So thank you all. Is there anything I forgot to ask you or anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
Just, I'll just build off what you were just saying, Karen, in that, you know, again, in our aspirational goals, Pony Club's greatest strength is that it is an educational organization, and we have the tools and the curriculum and the know-how and the experts to help this information get to a wider audience. And we really do hope to connect with some of our discipline organizations to provide that bridge, right? We have this strength. So let us help, let us teach your members. Let's spread this message so we can change a mindset, right? We can change how we do business.
Absolutely.
That's all, you know, just that.
Awesome. Just that. Just, you know, changing the world. That's all.
And tomorrow.
Oh my goodness. Well, I appreciate what you're doing, and I know the people listening to this are going to be applauding you, and wish you best luck on this, and I'm so excited to see what you guys come up with. And yeah, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.